Lord Peter Wimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter and Peter Jones as Bunter, with Anne Bell as Harriet Vane and Gabriel Wolfe as Chief Inspector Parker. Strong Poison by Dorothy L. Sayers. Adapted in 6 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 6, Turkish Delight. Lord Peter Wimsey has fallen in love with Harriet Vane, who is awaiting retrial for the murder of her former lover, Philip Boys. Convinced Boys was in fact murdered by his cousin, Norman Urquhart, for his share in their great-aunt, Mrs. Raeburn's fortune, Wimsey has suddenly realised that Urquhart now has the opportunity to destroy vital evidence against him.
Urquhart and Son solicitors?
Miss Murchison, is that you, Peter Wimsey, here?
Oh, good morning, Lord Peter.
Is anybody in the office? Can you talk?
Oh, yes, it's quite all right. Mr. Pond's in with Mr. Urquhart.
Good. Is the will safe? Mrs. Raeburn's will?
I think so, yes.
Urquhart hasn't destroyed it?
Not so far as I know.
Ah.
It arrived from Windle this morning, and Mr. Pond opened the envelope and took the will in to Mr. Urquhart.
But what did he do with it?
Oh, I think he just hid it away. About 2 minutes after Mr. Pond had come out, I pretended to have a query about a letter I was typing and walked straight into Mr. Urquhart's office. He was at the mantelpiece, but as soon as he heard me, he leapt guiltily back to his desk and stuffed a piece of Turkish delight into his mouth. Oh, he's always eating that stuff, you know.
Trying to distract your attention from something, what?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Unsuccessfully, though. Above the mantelpiece was a curious dark line which I'm sure isn't normally there. And I think it was a secret panel he hadn't slid back properly.
In other words, a hidden cupboard?
Yes.
Very interesting. Could you break into it, do you think, Miss Murchison?
Oh, I don't see why not. I've still got Bill Rum's pick locks, and I haven't forgotten what he taught me about breaking into the deed box. Would you like me to have a go?
I would, yes.
Then I'll see what I can do after everyone's gone this evening.
Splendid. And come round to my flat when you've finished. I'm having a conference this evening with Chief Inspector Parker and Freddy Arbuthnot to discuss all aspects of the case.
Oh, very well. I'll have to go now. Mr. Pond is coming back. Goodbye, Lord Peter.
Goodbye, Miss Murchison, and good luck.
Well, shall I start, Peter?
Yes, Charles. You have the notebook and the organized mind. Freddy and I haven't got either, have we, Freddy?
Not me, old man.
So you start, old Parker Bird. Off you go.
Thank you. Well, the matter stands, I take it, like this. Philip Boys and Norman Urquhart were the only surviving relations of Mrs. Raeburn, who is very old, very rich, and now quite childish. Now, in 1920, she executed a deed of trust giving Urquhart, who was also her solicitor, sole authority to handle her property. She also made a will, leaving all the real estate and £50,000 to Philip Boys, while Urquhart was named sole executor and residuary legatee. In other words, now Boys is dead. All the property devolves to him. In 1925, as we know from Mr. Arbuthnot's highly competent detective work in the city...
I say, really?
Certainly. Urquhart took the dangerous step of plunging into speculation. He made mistakes, he lost money, he plunged more deeply to recover himself and was involved to a large extent in the great crash of Megatherium Trust Limited. Now, in 1929, just about the time that Philip Boys and Harriet Vane quarrelled, Mrs. Raeburn had a serious attack of illness and nearly died. The danger passed, but it might recur at any moment. You can see the temptation for Urquhart. If only his cousin weren't alive, he'd be able to clear his debts as soon as the old girl went. So what happens? Almost immediately afterwards, we find him becoming friendly with Philip Boys and inviting him to stay at the house. And while living there, Boys has 3 attacks of illness, attributed by his doctor to gastritis, but equally consistent with arsenic poisoning. However, in June 1929, Philip Boys goes away to Wales and his health improves.
Yeah, that'll be Miss Murchison. Bunter will let her in. Carry on, Charles.
Yeah, well, while Boys is absent, Mrs. Raeburn has another alarming attack, and Urquhart hastens up to Windle, possibly with the idea of destroying the will if the worst happens. It doesn't happen. And he comes back to London in time to receive Boys on his return from Wales. And that night, Boys is taken ill with symptoms similar to those of the previous spring, but much more violent. After 3 days, he dies. Now,
Miss Murchison, my lord.
Lord Peter.
Ah, have you met Chief Inspector Parker?
How do you do?
The Honourable Freddy Arbuthnot. How do you do?
No, hello. Lord Peter.
I think the messenger has brought news. Look, the eyes glitter wildly. The expression is anxious. The lips are parted. The fingers fumble with the clasp of the bag. The symptoms point to an acute attack of communicativeness. Tell us the worst, Miss Murchison. The will has been destroyed.
Oh, no. It's quite safe. But I found out why Philip Boys was murdered.
Curiouser and curiouser. I thought that was the one thing we knew already. Sit down, dear lady, and explain.
Oh, thank you. Well, I broke into Mr. Urquhart's cupboard without much difficulty.
She broke in.
It's all right, Charles. Officially, you didn't hear that. Carry on, Miss Murchison.
Yes, well, I checked first that the will was still there, and it was. So then I looked at the other papers. They turned out to be receipts for security, share certificates, and so on. But the name seemed familiar. Then I remembered where I'd seen them before, on Mrs. Raeburn's deed of trust. Lord Peter, Mr. Urquhart raised money for his speculations in the Megatherium Trust by using Mrs. Raeburn's money as security.
Golly. So he not only lost all his own money, but all hers as well.
Yes, and that's a criminal offence, isn't it? Abusing your position as trustee.
It most certainly is, yes.
That's it, jolly well is.
And you're quite right, Miss Murchison. That, of course, is why it was essential to have Philip Boys out of the way before Mrs. Raeburn died. Urquhart was quite safe while she was alive. He only had to pay her household bills and so on, and he had a power of attorney to do that. But as soon as she shuffled off this mortal thingamay, he'd have to account to the other heir, i.e. Boys, for the capital he'd misappropriated. Yeah. Well done, Miss Murchison. A first-class motive for murder. Oh,
thank you. There is something else as well.
Indeed?
Tucked away at the back of the cupboard, I found a white paper packet. It had the name of a French chemist on it, and it contained a fine white powder.
Arsenic?
Oh, I don't know, but I brought a small sample with me. It's in this envelope.
Whoopee! Look at this, Charles.
Yes. It'll have to be analysed, of course.
And so it shall be, embodied caution. Bunter?
My lord?
Make ready the rack and thumbscrew.
Very good, my lord.
Bunter has been taking lessons in Marsh's test for arsenic and performs it to admiration. You know all about that too, don't you, Charles?
Enough for a rough test.
Carry on then, Bunter.
Thank you, my lord.
Yes. You still haven't got round the snag in the case against Urquhart, of course, Peter.
You mean how and when he actually did it?
Precisely. His only opportunity that evening was at the dinner he shared with Boys, and if anything in this case is certain, it is that the poison wasn't administered at that dinner. Everything which Boys ate or drank was equally eaten or drunk by Urquhart and all the servants, with a single exception of the Burgundy, which was preserved and analysed and found to be harmless.
I know. But that is what is so suspicious.
What?
Did you ever hear of a meal so hedged round with such precautions? It is not credible, Charles.
Oh, possibly not. But when did he administer the poison, then? Mr. Arbuthnot.
Don't ask me, old bean. I'm as much in the dark as you are.
Well, Miss Murchison, any ideas?
I don't think he did it at the dinner at all. Now, how about before or after? Did Boys have a whiskey when he arrived or before he left?
Alas, he did not. Bunter has been cultivating Hannah Westlock. That's the maid, don't you know? Almost to breach of promise point. And she says Boys went straight up to his room on arrival and didn't come down until a quarter of an hour before dinner.
How about the water bottle in the bedroom?
The devil. That is one up to you, Miss Murchison. We didn't think of that. The water bottle. Yes, what a perfectly fruity idea. Oh, Bunter, there you are. Next time you hold Hannah's hand, will you ask her whether Mr. Boys drank any water from his bedroom water bottle before dinner?
Pardon me, my lord. The possibility had already presented itself to my mind.
It had?
Yes, my lord.
Do you never overlook anything, Bunter?
I endeavour to give satisfaction, my lord.
Then don't talk like Jeeves. It irritates me. What about the water bottle?
I have elicited a somewhat peculiar circumstance relating to the receptacle, my lord. Hannah informed me that she showed Mr. Boyes into his bedroom on his arrival and withdrew, as it was her place to do. She had scarcely reached the head of the staircase when Mr. Boyes put his head out of the door and recalled her. He then asked her to fill his water bottle. She was considerably astonished at this request, since she had a perfect recollection of having previously filled it when she put the room in order.
Could he have emptied it himself?
Not into his interior, sir. There had not been time. Nor had the drinking glass been utilized. Moreover, the bottle was not merely empty, but dry inside.
Dry? Dry. Now, that convinces me, Peter. It really does. It's too complete, somehow. It's not natural for a defense to be so perfect.
My God, we have convinced Charles Parker. Nothing more is needed. He is more adamantine than any jury.
Yes, but I should still feel happier with a little evidence of a more objective kind.
You would? You want some real arsenic? Well, Bunter, what about this?
The apparatus is quite ready, my lord.
Very good. Then let's go and see if we can give Mr. Parker what he wants. Miss Murchison, Freddy, come along. We're going to Bunter's darkroom. Right. Bunter, lead, and we will follow.
You will perceive, my lord, that the apparatus is free from contamination.
I see nothing at all. That, as Sherlock Holmes would say, is what you may expect to see when there is nothing there. Charles, will you pass the water, the flask and the tube, old Uncle Tom Cobbley and all, as being arsenic-free?
I will.
Wilt thou love, cherish and keep her in sickness or in health? I'm so sorry. Turned over two pages at once. Ah, where's that powder? Miss Murchison, you identify this sealed envelope as being the one you brought from the office, complete with mysterious white powder from Mr. Urquhart's secret hoard.
I do.
Kiss the book. Thank you. Now then, the presence of arsenic will be revealed, if at all, by a thin silver stain on the part of this tube in the Bunsen flame. Ready, Bunter?
Yes, my lord.
So we now shoot in some of the powder. There it goes. And here it comes.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
Is that really arsenic, Lord Peter?
I hope so. It's either arsenic or antimony.
Allow me, my lord. The addition of a small quantity of solute chlorinated lime should decide the question beyond reach of cavil.
It's going. It's gone. It's all dissolved. That proves it's arsenic, all right.
Well, of course it is arsenic, didn't I tell you? Is that all?
Oh, isn't it enough?
Well, it's not quite, but it's a long way towards it. Now, we already knew that Urquhart had a motive for killing Philip Boyes. Miss Murchison has provided us with a better one, and she has now also established that he had means, i.e. arsenic. All we need now is to prove opportunity. Personally, I find the dinner deeply suspicious in itself, but to convince a jury, I should prefer something better than a credo quia impossibile.
Riddle me right and riddle me re. We've overlooked something, that's all. Give me the statutory dressing gown, an ounce of shag, and I will undertake to dispose of that little difficulty in a brace of shakes. Arsenic. Let me see. Arsenic, arsenic. They put arsenic in his meat and stared aghast to watch him eat. What's that? Houseman, ain't it? Shropshire lad, yes. A great Scott, of course! Good tap. Look, excuse me for a moment. What's got into old Whimsy?
Well, who knows? Well, this has been very satisfactory. Apart from all personal considerations, I'd be far happier to see that oily-haired fellow in the dock than any woman. And if the force has made a mistake, the sooner it's put right, the better for all concerned.
Charles, Freddy, Miss Murchison, Bunter. I know how it was done.
Good Lord. Really? How?
Well, I've still got to prove it.
A secondary consideration, my lord.
Thank you, Bunter. You know, I think we must have Mr. Urquhart round for coffee.
What?
Turkish coffee, of course. He has a sweet tooth. And you'd better lay in some Turkish delight as well. Not today, in a day or two, when I've made a few more inquiries. Meanwhile, I am going to Holloway to see the prisoner.
Peter!
Cheerio. Then you won't marry me?
No. It wouldn't be fair to you. And besides...
Well?
I'm frightened of it. One couldn't get away. I'll live with you, if you like. But I won't marry you.
But that sort of thing doesn't always work. dash it, all you ought to know. Oh, I'm sorry. Forgive me alluding to it and all that, but it's frightfully inconvenient. And one has as many rows as if one was married.
I know that. But you could cut loose any time you wanted to.
But I shouldn't want to.
Oh, yes, you would. You've got a family and traditions, you know. Caesar's wife and that sort of thing.
Last Caesar's wife. And as for the family traditions, they are on my side for what they're worth. Anything a Whimsy does is right, and heaven help the person who gets in the way. We've got a damned old family motto about it. I hold by my Whimsy, and quite right, too. Who's to stop me?
I suppose they can't stop you, but they can disapprove of me.
I am working on that. My sister Mary has just become engaged to Chief Inspector Parker.
What?
Yes, I know he arrested you, but he's got a good side, too. The fact is, I'm hoping their betrothal will help to let Helen down by degrees. My sister-in-law, don't you know, must frightful snob. My brother Gerald won't give a damn one way or the other. Oh, he'll huff and puff a bit, but he won't care. Not so long as Helen doesn't nag him about it. It'll be all right.
So you won't have a stink abroad with your impossible wife and live at obscure continental watering places like people in Victorian novels?
Certainly not.
They'll even forget I've had a lover?
My dear child, they're forgetting that kind of thing every day. They're experts at it.
And were supposed to have murdered him.
And were triumphantly acquitted of having murdered him, however greatly provoked.
Well, I won't marry you then. If people can forget all that, they can forget we're not married.
Oh, yes, they could, but I couldn't, that's all. We don't seem to be progressing very fast with this conversation. I take it the general idea of living with me doesn't hopelessly repel you?
No, but... Oh, it's all so preposterous. How can I say what I should or shouldn't do if I were free and certain of surviving?
Why not? I can imagine what I should do, even in unlikely circumstances, whereas what happens to you in court next week really is a dead cert. Straight from the stables.
Well, I can't. Oh, please do stop asking me. I don't know. I can't think. I can't see beyond the next few weeks. I only want to get out of this and be left alone.
All right. All right, I won't worry you. Not fair abusing my privilege and so on. You can't say pig and sweep out under the cirque, so I won't offend you. As a matter of fact, I'll sweep out myself. Keep smiling. More coffee, Mr. Urquhart? Or another piece of Turkish delight, perhaps?
No, thank you very much. All I desire now, Lord Peter, is that you should finish your extraordinary statement so that I may deny it and go.
I'm so sorry. I'm taking too long coming to the point, what? Well, slow but sure is the motto of yours faithfully. If I have so far taken up 70 minutes of your valuable time, believe me, it has not been unprofitably spent.
You may think so. But allowing that all this preposterous story were true, which, as I say, I most emphatically deny, I should be greatly interested to know how you imagine that I administered the arsenic to my cousin.
Very well, Mr. Urquhart. Let us ignore, then, all courses of that dinner previous to the last one. That is to say, the soup, the turbot, and the casserole chicken, since they were all consumed not just by yourself and boys, but also by Mrs. Pettycam and Hannah. Let us, in other words, Mr. Urquhart, concentrate on the jam omelette. Nobody but yourself and Philip partook of that omelette.
Quite so. I need not trouble to deny it. But you will bear in mind that I did partake of it, without ill effects. And moreover, that my cousin made it himself at the table.
So he did. Four eggs, if I remember rightly, with sugar and jam from what I may call the common stock. No, there'd be nothing wrong with the sugar or the jam. I believe I'm right in saying that one of the eggs was cracked when it came to the table.
Possibly, I don't remember.
No? Well, you're not on oath. But Hannah Westlock remembers that when you brought the eggs in, you mentioned that one was cracked and particularly desired that it should be used for the omelette. In fact, you yourself put it in the bowl for that purpose.
What about it?
Well, it is not difficult to introduce powdered arsenic into a cracked egg.
Are you suggesting that in the whisking together of four eggs, one particular poisoned egg was somehow kept miraculously separated from the rest? There seem to be some flaws in your theory, Lord Peter, as well as in the egg.
I haven't finished my theory yet. My next bit of it is built up from very trifling indications. Your disinclination to drink at dinner. Your complexion. A few nail parings I acquired from your manicurist. A snipping or so from your very well-kept hair. I put these together, add a packet of white arsenic from the secret cupboard in your office, rub the hands a little, so, and produce hemp, Mr. Urquhart, hemp.
I don't understand you.
Oh, you know, hemp. What they make ropes of. Great stuff, hemp. Yes, well, about the arsenic. As you know, it's not good for people in a general way, but there are some people, those tiresome peasants in Styria one hears so much about, for instance, who are supposed to eat it for fun. It improves their wind, so they say, and clears their complexions and makes their hair sleek. You must use solid arsenic, I understand, but if you do, and take a little bigger dose day after day, in time the doings, or what an old lady I knew in Norfolk called the tubes, get used to it. And you can take 6 or 7 grams at a time without so much as a touch of in the jaggers.
Very interesting.
Isn't it? Of course, you mustn't drink for 2 or 3 hours afterwards for fear of washing the beastly stuff into the kidneys and poisoning them. But if you're careful about that, you can more or less immunize yourself. Well, Mr. Urquhart, you have a nice, clear complexion. Except that I notice the arsenic has pigmented the skin here and there. It does sometimes. And you've got sleek hair and so on. And you were careful not to drink at dinner. And as I say, I've been in touch with your manicurist and barber and got specimens from them and had them analysed and all that. And what do you think? They're bung full of arsenic. Suspicious, what?
I can only suggest, Lord Peter, that you should be careful before you communicate this ludicrous theory to anybody. To give out that I am addicted to drug-taking habits is slander and criminal. It is quite true that I have for some time been taking a medicine which contains slight traces of arsenic. My doctor can furnish the prescription. And that may very likely have left a deposit in my skin and hair. But further than that, there is no foundation for this monstrous allegation.
None?
None.
Then how is it that you have this evening consumed, without apparent effect, a dose of arsenic sufficient to kill 2 or 3 ordinary people? That disgusting sweetmeat on which you have been gorging yourself, in, I may say, a manner wholly unsuited to your age and position, is smothered in white arsenic. You ate it, God forgive you, 1.5 hours ago. If arsenic can harm you, you should have been rolling about in agonies for the last hour.
You devil!
Couldn't you try to get up a few symptoms? Shall I bring you a basin or fetch the doctor? Does your throat burn? Is your inside convulsed with agony? It's rather late in the day, but with a little goodwill you could surely produce some display of feeling even now.
You're lying. You wouldn't dare to do such a thing. It would be murder.
Not in this case, I fancy. But I'm willing to wait and see.
You!
Ah! Yes, I wouldn't use violence if I were you. Let the poisoner stick to his bottle. Besides, I'm armed. Pardon the melodrama. Are you going to be sick or not?
You're mad!
Don't say that. Now come, man, pull yourself together. Have a shot at it. Shall I show you the bathroom?
I'm ill!
Well, of course, but your tone is not convincing. It's the third door on the left. Bunter?
My lord?
I think Mr. Parker may require some assistance in the bathroom.
Very good, my lord.
Wait a minute!
Oh! Come back!
Don't bother. It seems to be under control.
All right.
Yes, Charles?
He wasn't sick. Didn't even try to be. Ran straight in and tried to get out of the window. When he saw it was a 3-story drop, he charged out through the dressing room door and ran slap bang into my 2 constables. All right, Benson. You can take him downstairs.
Yes, sir.
By the way, Peter, I don't suppose you did actually poison him, did you? I mean, it doesn't seem to have hurt him, but it'll affect the doctor's report.
No, I didn't, as a matter of fact. I only wanted to see how he'd react to the suggestion. There was a king reigned in the East, Charles, if I may quote Hausmann again, who took every poison known to man so that nobody else could poison him. They put arsenic in his meat and stared aghast to watch him eat. They poured strychnine in his cup and shook to see him drink it up. I tell the tale that I heard told. Mithridates, he died old. But I doubt it, old Parker Bird, in this case. I doubt it very much. Marjorie. You come to pick Miss Vane up and it's over?
Yes.
Hmm. Well, the clerk's just finishing reading the indictment now. And here comes the Attorney General.
Millard, I am instructed that the Crown offers no evidence against this prisoner.
Mr. Attorney, do I understand that the charge against the prisoner is withdrawn?
Those are my instructions, Millard.
In that case, members of the jury, there is nothing left for you but to return a verdict of not guilty.
One moment, Millard.
Yes, Sir Impey?
Millard, on my client's behalf, on Miss Vane's behalf, Millard, I beg your indulgence for a few words. A charge has been brought against her, Millard, the very awful charge of murder. And I should like to make it clear, Millard, that my client leaves this court without a stain upon her character. I understand, Millard, that further information has come to the police which definitely proves the innocence of my client. I also understand, Millard, that a further arrest has been made, and an inquiry will follow, Millard, in due course. Millard, this lady must go forth into the world acquitted, not only at this bar, but at the bar of public opinion. Any ambiguity would be intolerable. And I am sure, Millard, that I have the support of the learned Attorney General for what I say.
By all means. I am instructed to say, Millard, that in withdrawing the charge, the Crown proceeds from complete conviction of her absolute innocence.
I am very pleased to hear it. Prisoner at the bar, the Crown, by unreservedly withdrawing this dreadful charge against you, has demonstrated your innocence in the clearest possible way. I most heartily congratulate you on this very satisfactory ending to your long ordeal. Members of the jury, do you find the prisoner guilty or not guilty?
Not guilty, Millard.
Very good. The prisoner is discharged without a stain on her character. Next case.
Harriet!
Oh, hello, Marjorie.
Congratulations. Three loud cheers.
Thank you.
I've got a taxi.
Good. Where is Lord Peter Wimsey? I must thank him.
No, you won't. He drove off just now with his brother, the Duke of Denver.
Oh.
Don't worry, he'll come and see you.
I don't think he will.
Oh. Too decent, you mean?
Yes.
Perhaps you're right. Yes, I think you are right. He won't do the King Cophetua stunt. And I must say, I'd rather take my hat off to him for it. You'll have to send for him, Harriet.
I won't do that.
I think you will. Yes, I think you will.
Well, Gerald, what do you have to say to me?
Look here, Peter, it's Mary. You're the only person with any influence over her. You've got to do something, Peter. She wants to marry your policeman friend.
I know, why shouldn't she?
Well, it's ridiculous.
Not at all. Charles is one of the best.
Very likely. Mary can't marry a policeman.
Now, look here, Gerald, you leave Mary alone. Charles made a bit of a mistake at the beginning of this murder case, but he doesn't make many. And one of these days he'll be a big man, with a title, I shouldn't wonder, and everything handsome about him. If you want to have a row with somebody, you have it with me.
My God, you're not going to marry a policewoman?
Not quite. I intend to marry the prisoner.
What? Good Lord, what?
Well, if she'll have me.
In the last episode of Strong Poison, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael, Bunter, Peter Jones, Harriet Vane, Anne Bell, Chief Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe, Miss Murchison, Betty Huntley-Wright, Freddie Arbuthnot, Christopher Schooler, Norman Urquhart, John Pullen, Attorney General and the Duke of Denver, Stephen Thorne, Sir Impey Biggs, Robert Gillespie, Marjorie Phelps, Rosalind Adams. Turkish Delight was adapted by Chris Miller from the book Strong Poison by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.